G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 210, brought to you by our Patreon members community. Without the support of our patrons, we simply would not be talking to you and bringing these stories to life each and every week. And a big shout out to the new members of the Patreon community. Things are going really well there, and you may be saying, well, why should I join and what do I get back in return? Well, for a start, you get two Zoom accountability meetings each month, and I don't know just on that where you'd get that sort of help and support for as much as a cup of coffee a month. Also there's a lot of bonus content. We have extra bonus podcasts. There's bonus discussion topics. There's a lot of five-minute focus audio series. There's audio series on things like breaking free from sugar, mindset shifts, and much, much more. But so come and join us there. You can see the link in the show notes at www.patreon.com/thefastinghighway. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast. I'm really delighted to be talking to Joe Bernardo. And Joe lives in Ohio there in the United States. And Joe is a registered nurse, as his wife is as well. And Joe has a really great handle on intermittent fasting and a passion absolutely exudes out of him, as you will hear in this episode. And Joe's pathway to finding intermittent fasting was a little bit different to most in terms of how his weight was affecting his life, as you'll hear in the episode. But I don't want to spoil it for Joe or the listeners, so I'll let Joe tell a story. Here he is, Joe Bernardo. Oh, g'day, Joe, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Graham. First of all, I just want to say it's an honor and a privilege to be on the Fasting Highway podcast. It's been a huge part of my journey. And so to be on here with you and meet you in person, it truly is an honor and a privilege.
Well, the honor is all mine, mate. And thank you for joining us here. But Joe, for people around the world listening to the podcast, if you wouldn't mind sharing a bit of information about how you sort of came to the point of taking up intermittent fasting and a bit of backstory on your life and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thank you for the forum. So I would say this stems all the way back to my youth and my childhood. I grew up always a scrawny kid. I was rail thin, skin and bones, my mom would tell me in our native tongue, which is Tagalog, I'm Filipino. And she would always want me to put on weight. I was just a weak and tiny guy all throughout my childhood. And like yourself, Graham, I was bullied quite often. There were those around me in my childhood that took advantage of my size, and they didn't say very nice things, and they didn't do very nice things to me. And the worst of it, when I was probably sixth and seventh grade, right around 11, 12, 13 years old. And, you know, I kept it secret. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my parents, my siblings. I didn't tell any teachers. And I really didn't even tell my wife until, you know, we were, you know, far into dating, and even after we're married, just divulging more information. And then, you know, I tell my kids about bullying and the importance of, you know, talking to people if you're bullied and letting someone know, just having gone through it. And then we use it as a tool to garner empathy. And I think that's helped a lot in, you know, raising our kids. But I recall thinking when I was younger, I wish I was bigger. You know, to me, an increase in size meant an increase in strength, an increase in even attractiveness. And those two things meant a decrease in bullying and a decrease in the jeers and the comments. But my problem was I could not gain weight. I tried so hard to gain weight. I tried to put on weight. I had uncles who were big into lifting weights, and they told me about protein shakes to gain mass. And so here I am at early teenage years trying to drink protein shakes to put on size. And I ate at will. I ate 3 square meals, sometimes 4 square meals a day, snacks in between and even after. This is the time that I developed my love and addiction to junk food. I know you have a very similar testimony. My parents had a food truck, a trailer, basically a mobile restaurant that they went to county fairs. I'm not sure if they have that in Australia, but we have these fairs that are very similar to carnivals or like a circus type atmosphere. And they sold food. And so we constantly had a supply of soft drinks because they sold soft drinks. And that became my staple drink. I drank soft drinks all throughout my childhood and had access to all of the carnival food that I wanted. And like I said, couldn't gain weight. I just chalked it up to a high metabolism, perhaps. I remember as a young child even thinking, do I have a tapeworm? I mean, why can I not put on weight? And it was all centered around, you know, this idea that if I gained weight, my life would be better. And this continued even throughout high school. To give you an idea, I graduated, I was 5'10" to 11" tall, weighing about 130 to 135 pounds. That's 58 to 59 kilograms. And so during my childhood, my teenage years, and throughout my high school years, the groundwork was laid. Two things. I had the mentality that bigger was better. I wanted to gain weight. And then two, I also laid the groundwork for this addiction to junk food and soft drinks without any regard for health. And I brought that into my early 20s and into my 30s. I didn't care what I ate. I didn't care about my health and the future effects of my dietary habits. And surprisingly, you know, I was in nursing school and I graduated nursing school at the age of 27. So that would have been 2007. And in nursing school, we learned a lot about nutrition and the importance of nutrition for health and for healing. And to be honest, Graham, I ignored most of it. and I reassured myself, falsely reassured myself that I was okay. I could eat whatever I want. The food pyramid in the US, the government endorsed standard dietary guidelines, told me that I should be eating a lot of carbs with every meal, carbohydrates. And so that's how I justified a lot of my diet. I ate a lot of carbohydrates in the form of junk food and sugars. Also, when you graduate nursing school and you're a new grad, you're oftentimes put on night shift. So I worked a 12-hour shift, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And I, you know, there's just not a lot of good eating habits that come out of that. I worked with a lot of colleagues that like to order out, and we ate in the wee hours of the morning. We ate all the junk food we wanted. Now, in my late 20s and early 30s, it started to happen. My metabolism slowed, allowing my eating habits to catch up, and I started to gain weight. Now, mind you, I was excited about this, right? I was elated. I was finally putting on weight, and I was glad to be doing so. And, you know, Graham, this was greater than a decade after I graduated high school. There was no more bullying. I was in my 30s. You know, I was already married, but that mentality was still there that, you know, I wanted to be bigger. You know, it was that ingrained in my head. And I had no reason. There was no bullying to quell anymore. But it's just a lesson that that stuff sticks. Those things from childhood, they stick, you know. And so people started to notice that I started to put on weight. I remember family members and friends, you know, saying, hey, Joe, you're putting on weight. So they could obviously tell that I was doing so. And I was open about desiring to put on weight. So, you know, I continued little by little putting on weight into my late 30s. You know, my BMI ran up to overweight. So my BMI was in the mid to upper 20s. And, you know, I started to notice my gut was getting bigger. Things that were part of everyday life were starting to get a little bit more difficult. It's hard for me to bend, to tie my shoes, put on my socks without straining. And so in my mid to late 30s, I decided to, okay, let's try and lose some of this weight. You know, I gained a little bit of weight. I'm happy with that. Let's try and just, you know, either stop it in its tracks or even take off a few pounds. And I just didn't feel healthy. So I decided to take up running. And so my wife and I endeavored to take up a program called Couch to 5K. It's a program that takes you from a sedentary lifestyle on the couch watching TV to running a 5K race within about an 8 to 9 week period. And we did it. We enjoyed it. We did it together. It's a great thing to do, especially if you have the support to do it. And my wife and I both ran races. And lo and behold, in the process of training for those 5Ks, I lost approximately 25 to 30 pounds. And I thought, this is good. And I did it through what I call a calorie buyback program, basically a calorie deficit where I would use activity and the calories I would burn from that activity to allow myself to eat, you know, and maintain a certain calorie intake. Like I was sticking around maybe 2,500 calories and maintain a deficit because I was so active. And, you know, it was good. I had a good time running and enjoyed losing the weight. I remember my mom coming to me and saying, "Joe, you know, you're looking good. You know, how are you losing all this weight?" You know, she was interested in losing weight as well. And I said, "Well, Mom, it's no big deal. You just got to run 5 to 10 miles a day." And she was, I want to say, in her 70s at the time. And she's like, "I can't do that, you know." And lo and behold, I end up injuring my knee. It was an IT band issue during running. I was about maybe almost 40 years old and I injured my knee and I could not run anymore. And I immediately fell back into old habits, more sedentary. I didn't even walk anymore. I just, you know, went back to decreased activity, and I still had my bad eating habits. And so that opened the door to the beginning of 2020. And we all know what happened in 2020, the great pandemic, right? So for our household, that meant being locked in like everybody else was, but that also meant binge watching TVs and movies. And I had my daily dose of my banana split ice cream treat. And that was a regular thing for me. That was a rough time because we didn't do too much. We couldn't leave our house and we were very inactive. So fast forward to 2022, the summer of 2022, we were getting ready to go on vacation and go out to the outside world again. And we're packing, and our flight had a maximum baggage weight of 50 pounds. And so I was getting our luggage scale, and by divine providence, our luggage scale, which was a handheld scale, broke. And so I had the bright idea of getting the bathroom scale, stepping on the bathroom scale by myself, and then I would pick up the luggage and then weigh both myself and the luggage, subtract the difference, and voila, there's our luggage weight. And I'm so glad that luggage scale broke, because when I stepped on the scale to weigh myself alone, I looked down to see the highest number that I'd ever seen, and quickly took out my calculator, did the BMI calculation, and I had breached 30. Now, the first time that I had breached 30, which is obese level. This was eye-opening for me, because I had been avoiding the scale just because I knew that I had been living a sedentary lifestyle and eating whatever I wanted to eat. And at this point, I'm no longer happy that I'm gaining weight. Now I'm a little bit troubled. So as a registered nurse, and my wife is also a registered nurse, we decided to take an objective health assessment and just look at myself and see where I'm at and be honest about it. So one, I knew I was obese, and I knew, you know, working in the healthcare field, that all of the risk factors that come with that and all of the issues. And like your testimony as well, I was a snorer, and I probably had some sort of undiagnosed sleep apnea, sciatic issues. I couldn't stand or sit in a single spot for greater than 10 minutes without getting just painful numbness and tingling that would run down the back of my legs, which was very debilitating for my line of work. Arthritis. My hands were very arthritic. I would wake up in the morning having to pry open two fingers on each of my hands, and it was not a pleasant process each morning. Low back pain. That was another thing that had developed over time. Just sometimes my back would lock up. And mind you, I'm only about 42 years old at this time. And I just, you know, took a step back, looked at everything, and thought, you know what, it's time. It's time that I should probably be eating better than all this junk and all of these soft drinks. And again, I'm still addicted to soft drinks. I'm having upwards of six to eight soft drinks before I even start my dinner at dinner. My wife, earlier in 2022, in the spring of 2022, had been looking into Jen Stevens in her book and also found the Fasting Highway podcast. She was also looking into others like Dr. Eric Berg and Dr. Jason Fung. And so she tells me, after my eye-opening experience of seeing my weight and BMI, of intermittent fasting and all of its benefits. And she starts using words that I had never heard of in the healthcare field, like autophagy, mitophagy, increasing of BDNF to help with, neuron repair and increasing human growth hormone and all these benefits of intermittent fasting. And I laughed at her. I said, there is no way. I laughed at the idea of an extended period of not eating. It just didn't make sense to me. And I was not ready for that. You speak a lot in your book about the change in mindset that one must have in order to embark on their journey. And I didn't have it. I know I didn't have it. And so what was my turning point? What was my change in mindset? It was about 2 months after that, realization of my BMI breaching 30, when I experienced something that I'd never experienced. And that was shortness of breath with exertion. And I'm not talking about just shortness of breath where you're out of shape and you try to do an activity or a sport and you can't, catch your breath. I'm talking about the scary shortness of breath where you can't catch your breath and you feel like something is just terribly wrong, almost causing like a little bit of anxiety and panic. And that was with minimal activity. I'm talking about walking up just three flights of stairs to my office, just shooting hoops a little bit. And I've always been, as scrawny as I was growing up, I was still pretty athletic. So shortness of breath was very foreign to me. And that's what it took, So I went to my wife with my tail between my legs. And I said, please tell me more about this intermittent fasting and eating healthier. And so I did my research, which included hours of, dedication to podcasts, your podcasts, videos, YouTube videos, reading books and summaries of books, a wealth of knowledge that's out there. And so I did my research first. And after doing so, it was September of 2022 that I started on my intermittent fasting journey. I took an assessment of my baseline eating habits, and I was eating at a 10-14 protocol, 10 hours of fasting, which was basically my hours of sleep, and 14 hours of eating. So I started with a 16-8 protocol, and I figured that would be a little bit of a challenge for me, basically eating everything from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., allowing me my three meals per day and perhaps snacks in between. This proved to be quite easy for me. I didn't actually feel like this was a challenge at all. So I did this for about 3 days, and I decided to graduate to an 18-6 protocol, eating all my food from noon to 6 p.m. And this proved to be a lot harder. I experienced intense hunger right around 10, 10:30 a.m. I remember the first day on the 18-6 protocol, I was at work and I was ready at my microwave, ready to heat my food at 11:58 a.m. Ready, as soon as that clock hit noon, I was going to scarf down that food, which is exactly what I did. But it did get easier over time. And so I did the 18-6 protocol for about 10 to 15 days with increasing success as far as difficulty is concerned. And then lo and behold, one day I got really busy at work and I had to skip lunch. And I was driving home and recalling the events of the day and realizing at that moment, hey, I didn't eat lunch. And to my surprise, I didn't die. So it is possible to not eat lunch and be okay. And once I had that realization and that it was, not only a possibility, but it was something I actually did, then I went to a 24 protocol, basically just a light snack and then my dinner meal. And at this point, I'm starting to see a decrease in my weight, and my clothes are starting to feel more loose, and my belt, I'm having to not tighten as much. I'm having to tighten more rather. And, I thought those non-scale victories, as you talk about, were just wonderful to see, because oftentimes when I would plateau with my weight, I would be encouraged by the things that weren't measurable by the scale. And those are, you know, great to grab a hold of and really call out. And so I did the 24 protocol for about 3 weeks, and I decided it's time to move to OMAD and challenge myself with that. So I basically cut out the snack and went to one meal a day. And I felt like this was a very large milestone for me to achieve. I didn't think that I could ever get to this point. I had a family member that had achieved OMAD, and I thought that's something that I could never do. So I was very excited about this. You know, I was very stoked. But I was still eating whatever I wanted to eat, the standard American diet, or, you know, the standard Western diet of junk food and soft drinks. And so a week into OMAD, I thought to myself, you know what, I would probably do well to, you know, eat better, maybe look at the foods that I'm eating and see where I could decrease the junk, decrease the carbohydrates, the soft drinks, and, you know, did a little bit of research as well. And that ultimately led me to a decreased amount enough of carbs where it became ketogenic. And I actually purchased a Keto Mojo machine, and I measured my blood ketones and measured glucose. And it gives you a number called the GKI, where you can measure how far into ketosis you are. And that worked really very well for me. And so when I was doing OMAD and a decrease in carbs, I felt like that's when the magic really started to happen for me. The results just exponentiated. Not only did my weight fall even faster, but my belly fat and subcutaneous fat all around just started to melt off. People really started to take notice of the changes that they were seeing just physically. I started with a BMI of 30. Just above 30, 30.8 in September, and I reached my goal BMI of 23.3 based on, again, research that I had done on December 31st of 2022, so just about 4 months. The non-scale victories were just amazing. So skin, you know, you mentioned skin in your book. My skin was so much smoother. My wife experienced the same non-scale victory. Her skin just very smooth. Eczema, just gone, cleared up in just a little bit of time. My snoring completely has been eliminated from my life. Joints, my swelling, that's completely gone. I no longer have to pry open my fingertips. My sciatic issues, it's so wonderful to be able to stand in, you know, a single spot, you know, at church singing songs and not have to sit down or not have to walk around. So that's been eliminated. My back pain is gone. Shortness of breath with exertion is gone. I take the steps at every possible interval I can. I try to, you know, stay away from the elevators. I play basketball now every Thursday with a lot of younger guys, and I'm able to keep up with them running up and down the court and even banging around with them down low and different things like that. Clarity of thought. So in my field, it's very important, you know, to have clarity of thought as a registered nurse. During the pandemic, they had asked us nurses, I had moved away from bedside nursing to the business side of things, and I work with computers as a registered nurse, but they had asked us to come back to the bedside to, you know, engage in patient care again. And it was in the midst of when I was going through intermittent fasting and eating better. And the clarity of thought that I experienced was just so beneficial to having, you know, having to relearn skills, you know, that I'd lost by getting away from the bedside. And I told my wife, you know, when I was working at the bedside again, I feel like I'm thinking so much, you know, so clear. My focus, you know, was just incredible. And I was working on the floor in the wee hours of the morning, 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. And then I was working my normal job, 7 a.m. to like 4 p.m. And it was not even an issue. There was no problem waking up early and, you know, with fatigue or any of that. The energy was just really, really, you know, something to consider. It was just such a great experience. I was sleeping well. Even though I required less sleep, the sleep that I was getting felt very deep. My hunger during my fasting period, you know, was very minimal. At first, when I was, you know, first going to that 18-6 protocol, it was debilitating, that hunger. But, you know, after, you know, getting to my goal, and even, you know, towards the end there where I was getting to my goal, my hunger just was dissipated. And if I did get any, it was easily remedied with a little bit of water. And then just, you know, knowing more about my body and what, you know, how resilient our bodies are and how good fasting is for it. Something that is so just counterintuitive to someone who's in healthcare. You know, we were advising, you know, diabetics, we're advising, you know, people with metabolic issues to eat, you know, 3 square meals, make sure you have snacks in between. I remember giving diabetics snacks before bedtime, you know, after giving them insulin and thinking that that's, you know, there might be a time and place for that or a patient for that, but just as a standard, just, you know, now knowing what I know and knowing what I've experienced and knowing how others have benefited from intermittent fasting, just, you know, those guidelines go against, you know, what reality is, I believe, you know, that intermittent fasting can provide. So, you know, fast forward to 2023 up to present, you know, I've added resistance training. You know, now that I've hit my weight goals, I've added resistance training. I've increased my protein intake and I've actually put on some weight, you know, but I feel like it's in a healthy manner. I feel like it's, you know, lean mass. I'm working out, you know, on a regular basis. I feel stronger. You know, it's just, I live out my life in a 24 protocol. So I'm no longer doing OMAD. Now that I'm in maintenance mode, I feel like, you know, 24 has worked out well for me. So I've been doing that now for, approximately 6 to 7 months, living out a 24 lifestyle. You know, and, you know, to be honest, we still celebrate from time to time where we come off of intermittent fasting and, you know, our dietary restrictions with low carb. We just recently went on a vacation and, you know, I tell my family, you know, I have a work hard, play hard mentality. You know, let's put in the work on an everyday basis. And then when it's time to play and celebrate, let's play and celebrate. You know, let's put aside intermittent fasting and low carb eating for the meantime and let's just enjoy together, you know? And so we have those times where when we're on vacation or a birthday or a holiday that we'll go ahead and celebrate. And then when that's over, we go right back to it. Having experienced all these benefits and with people noticing, I've also taken up coaching. So it was about the early 2023 where people were really starting to inquire about what I was doing, you know, seeing the changes that I was experiencing. And, you know, I love talking about it. I don't often bring it up, you know, proactively, but if people ask about it, I'm more than willing to talk about it and excited to talk about it. And it's probably one of the best aspects of having gone through this journey is the ability to convey the information that I've received and to help others experience and achieve health, you know, through the very information that I've received as well. So I've had the privilege of helping people who have reversed type 2 diabetes in just a short time span. One gentleman who I help coach with intermittent fasting and then also with, you know, better eating. He reversed his type 2 diabetes from, I want to say Thanksgiving of 2022. So when I first started, shortly after I first started, and he was taking off all his diabetic meds in March of 2023. And he was just, you know, confusing his doctors. It was amazing. And so he is an advocate too for intermittent fasting and all of its benefits. But people have been taking off blood pressure medications, my blood pressure. You know, I had undiagnosed hypertension. You know, I'm not one to go to doctors, but I know my blood pressure as a nurse, again, running in the 130s, 140s over 90s, you know, is now in the 110s over 70s. So, you know, great experience. And so, you know, my extended family, they're doing it too. My sisters, my parents, they're all fasting extended and intermittent with regularity. And I've even, you know, just my desire is to shout this from the rooftops, you know. It's just been such an amazing experience. I started a YouTube channel just to get the word out there. And yeah, just the amazing journey. And so to be here on the Fasting Highway podcast brings it all full circle to just, you know, a climactic point. And yeah. You know, I have you to thank and I appreciate this forum.
No, look, it's that's a great backstory, mate. I really enjoyed that. you know, a lot of synergies with me, and particularly the bullying at school and all that sort of thing. I really resonate with that. And, you know, growing up with that, it's pretty tough. And, you know, you going into the medical profession as well and knowing what you know now, I can imagine there's some sense of frustration for you working in a hospital where you're seeing those sorts of things they're doing and giving patients. I know I've talked about it. I was in a hospital here, Joe, and I was seeing them bringing around these trays of food, and I knew how to calculate how much sugar was in food fairly quickly by that stage. And they put this tray down, and I looked at it, and I calculated there was 30 teaspoons of sugar on this tray. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm in a private hospital. This is a top hospital here in Perth. They're doing this three times a day, plus the afternoon tea, plus the morning tea, plus the snacks and all of that. And I calculated they were giving people over 100 teaspoons of sugar a day in hospital. And I was thinking, what chance do people actually have? So you as a medical professional, but I'll just strip it back for a minute. Like when you first started fasting, Joe, when you've done all the research, your wife's been doing it, she's talked about it. You probably thought this sounds a bit crazy, that sort of thing. There's a lot of people have that reaction. Then once you delved into it and you got the research and you got going, because you're obviously a guy that likes to analyze things and go down rabbit holes and look at the science of the stuff and that sort of thing before you got going. But were you eating all the normal sort of stuff when you first started, or did you decide to sort of, you know, you talked about that low-carb keto sort of style that you were doing. But was that a conscious thing, and has that changed? Have you found that you're just gravitating more and more to higher quality food as you go along?
Yeah, so when I first started with intermittent fasting, I did not watch what I ate. I still ate the junk food. When my window opened, I say, let's go to the local junk food. We can, or fast food joint, we can eat now. So it wasn't until that, you know, I hit OMAD that I decided to eat better. And part of the reason of that, Graham, is because of the difficulty of managing diet restrictions while you're eating 3 to 4 meals a day with snacks. That's hard to manage, you know. You're talking about counting, you know, different macronutrients for 3 to 4 meals. And so that was just too cumbersome for me. So I had no desire, you know, to really do any type of diet restriction, even when I was decreasing my eating window. When I looked at my eating habits on OMAD, it was a lot simpler. I was eating one meal. So I only had one meal to consider if I was going to add any type of diet restriction. And so coming from the healthcare field, you know, I knew about ketosis and all of its benefits and what causes the metabolic switch from burning sugar to burning fat. But I didn't know that it's something that I could benefit from. And so I did more research, you know, and found that, hey, you know, it's something that even I can do. So that's when I decided during my OMAD period to cut my carbs and cut them low enough to where I could burn off belly fat. And, you know, for me, as well as many other people, belly fat is some of the most stubborn fat to come off. It seems like it's the last fat to come off. And as well as, you know, finding out about visceral fat and organ fat, and knowing how prominent non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is. And, you know, that scared me too. And I'm thinking, all this sugar that I'm eating, it's, you know, it's getting stored as fat somewhere, you know. And I've never had any scans of my internal organs, but I can imagine that there was some visceral fat in there as well. So that's, like I said, when I did OMAD, that's when I decided to go low carb. What I currently do now is also low carb. Actually, on my 24 protocol, I eat near zero carbs. I do allow myself a few cruciferous vegetables, but for the most part, it's all fats and proteins. And, you know, I feel great, you know, on that 24 protocol with that low carb.
Yeah. Okay, great. And so do you drink alcohol at all, Joe?
I do. When it's time to celebrate, I do. Yeah. Yeah. We were just, like I said, on vacation, and we enjoyed our drinks together, knowing that it was going to be short lived and we would be hard at it again.
Yeah. I like that you talked about that, about life is to be lived, Joe, right? Like when you have these special occasions and you go on holidays and vacations, they're rare, right? You know, sometimes we catch up with people we haven't seen a long time. So it's important for me that intermittent fasting has to have some sort of flexible to be sustainable for the long term. Otherwise, you can get dragged into this mentality of, man, this is a chore. I can't do anything. I can't go anywhere. I can't enjoy myself. So what you said then about, you know, enjoying the moment and then going right back to your normal protocol when you get back from that. And then this short-term thing, if it's only a short-term vacation or whatever. But I think that's really important for people to understand, isn't it, Joe, that you can lead this lifestyle but still enjoy yourself.
Absolutely. I totally agree 100%. And, you know, that's something we instill in our kids too, you know, is that at a young age, we want them to learn healthy eating, you know, because of the lasting effects of, you know, that I've experienced from my childhood. And, but we do teach them there are times when you need to be social, when you need to, you know, put aside all that diet stuff and intermittent fasting to just enjoy life together.
Yeah, 100%. And with your children, do you feel like as a dad, I mean, you're quite a young man still. And, you know, I know for my kids, I felt that regret going through their school life as an obese parent. And I think now you're talking about running around, playing basketball, shooting hoops, that sort of thing. And, you know, leading by example for your kids. And I guess that's a thing that's a bit of your why as well, that you do want to be a role model for your children.
Absolutely. And it, you know, if I'm honest, it could be difficult at times because I know that eating is enjoyable and eating, you know, the junk food, the soft drinks, it's enjoyable. And it's not my intention or purpose to, you know, completely take out those enjoyable things out of their life, but to provide some sort of balance and, you know, reasonable understanding of those things and, you know, and what they could potentially do as far as harm. So we balance those things as much as we can, and with the ultimate goal that, you know, they come out in the end understanding those things.
Yeah, it's like, and teaching them what is in that food as well, I think is important for children to know. I know my daughter, she was a drive-through queen, and she was like talking about, oh, Dad, these frozen Cokes and so good. And I said, yeah, okay, do you know how many teaspoons of sugar in there? I didn't want to steal her joy away. I just wanted her to know. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, I said, you count out this many teaspoons of sugar on a plate, look at it. That's what's in that drink. And you know what? She never had one again. And she said to me, wow. Dad, if I'd have known that for the start, I wouldn't have been having that because I don't need that amount of sugar from one drink. And I said, exactly. And I said, you mentioned there, earlier, Joe, that you were drinking 6-7, you know, sodas or soft drinks before your dinner. You know, there you go, 40-50 teaspoons of sugar into your body. And it's really hard when people don't realize the damage that beverages do in our eating windows as well, because they'll say to me, oh, you know, it's my eating window, I can have 3 or 4 Cokes. And I'll say, yeah, but as long as you realize that you're taking in 40 teaspoons of sugar from that Coke, and if your purpose and goal is to lose weight and you're not, and you're wondering, scratching your head, why I'm not losing weight, well, there may be an answer in your eating window through just those beverages. And it might be that one thing that's holding you back. You know what I mean? Like when you talk to people, and you mention there that you coach people now, Joe, and I guess when you talk to people and you delve into what they're actually doing in their eating window, then sometimes they tell you and you sit there and go, well, you know, there's your answer. You know, you if you just simply let go and delay that. But a lot of people find it hard to let go. Did you find it hard to let go of those foods, or did you find a natural transition to just move to this healthier eating pattern?
You know, I think when I look at my change in mindset, I think once I had that change in mindset, I was determined. I'm a very determined individual. When I get excited about something, as you have properly assessed, I dive into it. I do my analysis and I jump in with 2 feet. And once I had that change in mindset, when I got that shortness of breath, I was ready. If somebody told me to give up soda, let's do it. Let's give it up. And that's what's so important, I think, and you so properly emphasized it in your book, is that change in mindset, that aha moment, that catalyst moment where people decide, I'm determined to do this. I'm going to change my eating habits. And that's something that, you know, when coaching others or even telling loved ones about, you know, the benefits of IF and better eating, it's something that I struggle with and battle with, because in one hand, I feel like with the knowledge that I've gained about intermittent fasting and low carb eating, that I have some sort of an elixir or a cure for a lot of their ailments. And on the other hand, I understand that if their mindset isn't there, they're just not ready. And so what I've come to conclude is that I like to plant seeds and water seeds. So I plant the seeds. I, you know, tell them a little bit here and there. And I sort of gauge and assess, you know, from my own perspective, if they have that change in mindset. And if not, so be it. I'm not here to push. I'm here to respect. And, you know, I plant another seed, or I water a previous seed and tell them more about IF, or tell them about autophagy and different things like that. And all the while just hoping and praying that it doesn't take some sort of serious health event for them to have that change in mindset. I feel very blessed, Graham, that I came across, you know, the material, the information, your podcast when I did. And I'm very thankful that it only took shortness of breath with exertion to get me to have that mindset, because I've had family members that have had that change of mindset, but it took a stroke. It took something very serious to occur. And so that's, like I said, something that I grapple with, the idea that I, you know, we have this knowledge that we want to convey, but we have to be respectable if they're just not there yet.
Yeah. I call it the big boy's pants syndrome, Joe. It's where you get to that point in your life where you've got to put on your big pants and say, you know what? I'm an adult here and I have to make some adult decisions for my health. And you just have to take your health back. And now you talk about the catalyst moments, and it was me sitting on that aircraft in Sydney, you know, in 2017, and the seatbelt was just fitting me and I felt crushed in my seat. I was taking up half my wife's seat. And I just had that aha moment. I thought, this is the big pants moment, right? I've got to put my big pants on here, look myself in the mirror and do something about my health. And when I did, everything started to change. And I think you strike me as such a positive guy, Joe, and I really love it. I love your passion that you have for this. I can really see it oozing out of you and hear it in your voice. And I think that's fantastic that you want to shout it from the rooftops, because the more people that do that, and I know it's really hard too, not to stop talking about it sometimes when you get so passionate about it and you get in situations where you think, man, I've just got to stop talking about this. But you know, it's hard not to, because it's like a secret that you want to share with people about this fantastic lifestyle and journey that they can go on to revolutionize their health. And I think when you get to that moment in time in your life where you just go, you know what, I just want to do this for myself and I'm going to take my health back. And then you start, and then you can see all the benefits you talked about. You know, those arthritic fingers, I had the same thing. Couldn't open my hands in the morning. All of a sudden I could. Psoriasis all over my body. Completely vanished in front of me. And you get so convinced that this is the lifestyle for you, because you can not only see the weight coming off, but you can see so many other benefits. And, you know, I want to talk about your support networks for a minute, Joe, because you mentioned there that yourself and your wife are doing this together in the same sort of field of work and that sort of thing. So I think that must be much easier to do that when you're sort of on the same page, but you may not do quite the same protocol.
Yes, that's correct. My wife is an amazing support. She's the one who introduced me to intermittent fasting, and she's the one, you know, supporting, and I'd like to hope that I support her as well. And we do, we hold each other accountable, and you're absolutely right. There, you know, I cannot tell you how important that it is to have a support system, somebody who's doing this alongside of you that can hold you accountable, that can ask you the hard questions, that can encourage you, that can share recipes with. We're big foodies in our home. We love food and we love to cook food. We love to cook good food. And so we encourage each other with recipes. As a matter of fact, we tried something today that we had never tried. And I roasted some bone marrows, some beef bone marrows. And, you know, we tried it and lo and behold, it tasted amazing. And so we're going to add that to our repertoire and our collection of food that we're going to eat together. So you're absolutely right. It's very important to have that support system. I'm fortunate enough to have, you know, my wife, but I know many people who don't have, you know, a support system. I know right now I'm trying to, you know, coach a family member who is, you know, all about it and ready to do it. But at the same time, you know, their spouse isn't ready. And so they're still making all of the temptations, you know, the foods, the sweets and all that. And it's in the home still. And that's just it's a very difficult situation when you have all those temptations and you're trying to resist constantly. So I'm very thankful for, you know, my wife and her wealth of knowledge as a nurse, but then also as, you know, someone who loves me dearly and wants to see me live a very long and prosperous life.
Yeah. And do you guys find it frustrating as medical people and nurses that, you know, there is a sort of an answer, if you like, to the obesity problem that we have? And yet we don't see it implemented a lot in the mainstream. Like for me, intermittent fasting is so far away from mainstream, it's not funny. Because do you find it a sense of frustration that, you know, we know intermittent fasting can be so great to help people, you know, not only reverse things like obesity and type 2 diabetes, and you know, yet it's still not mainstream out there, is it? I know here in Australia, it's getting more known and it's getting more talked about, but it's certainly not mainstream. How do you see it there in America?
I would say it's very similar. It's not mainstream. And the knee-jerk reaction by healthcare providers and anybody really is that, you know, is pushback against intermittent fasting and better eating. I find it very frustrating. And when I hear of friends and family members talk to their doctors and their doctors give them, you know, advice that goes against intermittent fasting principles and low carb eating principles, it makes my blood boil, you know. And I just tell them, you know, do the research yourself, you know, put them into play, you know, start intermittent fasting, start with, you know, a very small protocol of, you know, maybe 16-8, and see how you feel, you know. And I encourage baby steps a lot of times. You know, I've found in my small coaching experience that baby steps seems to work much better than jumping 2 feet in like I did. You know, baby stepping into it, try an 18-6 protocol, see how you feel, see what kind of victories you have, see how the scale responds, you know. And I feel like, you know, if they just experience some of those benefits, they'll start to realize that, you know, that intermittent fasting truly does increase health. And it does go against, you know, health guidelines, but, you know, it's the truth. It does help health. So, yeah, I do find it frustrating. And it's just one of those things that I've just sort of, you know, just accept as the world we live in.
Yeah. Yeah, I know for me, it's frustrating when I walk through a shopping center or walk down the street. And I know in Australia here, Joe, our obesity rates are going through the roof. It's not going backwards. It's increasing because we got more and more fast food places available, more chain stores opening here in Australia. There's more suburbs, more populations. So that brings more fast food and that type of thing. And we're seeing the results of that on our streets and our schools. I went to my daughter's final school thing a few years ago now, and they had like 500 kids. And I would say 30-40% of them were well on their way to becoming obese. And I just was so sad about that. And I thought, man, there's got to be change out there. And I think if we can sort of educate people that you don't have to be obese, do you, Joe? You don't have to carry all that weight around. There is something that you can do to take your health back. And intermittent fasting isn't onerous. I mean, let's face it, Joe, it's a pretty simple thing. You're fasting in a period of time. You're feasting in a period of time. As far as the fasting goes, it's actually quite a simple process in terms of the clean fast as well. And did you get that message, Joe, of the clean fast with all the research that you did right from the start with your fasting, or did that come later?
No, my wife had explained to me about clean fasting. And when I initially started with intermittent fasting, I went directly to clean fasting.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. And so, yeah, now, I mean, you've come through the other side now. You've lost the weight. You've got healthy. You're passionate about it. You're helping other people with your coaching and that sort of thing and your YouTube channel. And so going forward, Joe, is this something that yourself and your wife is sort of think that you're going to commit to for the rest of your life? I mean, sometimes when we say we're going to do things for life, it can be quite challenging to actually do that, because when you get into your sort of 70s, 80s, 90s, I mean, I don't know if I'd be as rigid with my fasting protocol at 80 as what I might be at 60, but I certainly want to live the next 20 odd years as healthy as I can. So I think it's for me, it's a no-brainer to be after full longevity is a big why for me.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the same page as you. I see this as a lifestyle change. I don't see this as a fleeting fad that we're going through. I see this as the way we're going to live out the rest of our life. You know, like you said, you know, the goal is, you know, to live to the next decade. So I really feel like this is the way, as you stated, to take health into your own hands and be responsible for your own health. I was looking up statistics not too long ago, and, you know, I passed a sign actually in one of the local hospitals that said, if you live long enough, 1 in 3 will get cancer. And that sparked me to look up other statistics. And I can't remember the statistics exactly, but it was one in X amount will get heart disease, autoimmune disease, will have a stroke, will have diabetes. And then obviously the obesity rate is just horrendous. And I remember thinking to myself, those are really our odds here? You know, are we really just rolling the dice and seeing, you know, where, you know, what comes of that, or let the chips fall where they may? And I feel like with intermittent fasting, we're taking our health back into our own hands, and yeah, we're beating the odds, you know, because if you eat like the average person, sure, those are the average odds for the average person, you know, but if you're not eating like the average person, that's where you find the better odds. So this is definitely a lifelong change for us. I don't see this as temporary at all. As a matter of fact, I tell my wife, my motivation when I'm feeling discouraged, not necessarily discouraged, but when I'm feeling like I'm having a hard day or just a hungry day, so to speak, my youngest daughter, her name is Clara. And I tell myself, Clara's kids. I want to see Clara's kids. And that's motivation, yeah, for me to, you know, wait till, yeah, my window.
I'm the same, mate. I've got two daughters that are 22 and 24, and you know, at some stage, if God willing, they might have children, and you know, I want to be able to run with them, I want to be able to play with them, I want to go and shoot hoops with them like you do, you know, I want to be a fit and active grandfather. And I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life right now at 60. I feel like I'm in better condition now than what I was when I was 30, and you know, it just feels amazing to me that I'm able to do that. You know, I don't have many medical issues. I've got some arthritis in my right hip, which I'll have to deal with at some stage, just degeneration stuff, you know, lifetime of knocks and that sort of thing, and just arthritic things. But apart from that, I'm pretty healthy. I'm healthy as a bean. You know, my doctor says everything else is flying in my body. But I think with the science, Joe, and, you know, it's important to know what's going on the outsides of our body. But for you also, and I guess when you're talking to people about this, it's important to know what's going on in the inside and getting the right checks and that sort of thing. And for us, it's regular blood work and keeping an eye on what's going on. Because I feel with fasting, one of the things that people miss when they look at the scale and they might get frustrated by the weight loss that they may not be seeing. It's important to know what's going on in the inside every day that you fast. And for me, it's like going through a car wash and getting your organs scrubbed daily, your cells regenerated. Like there's always something going on in the fast, you know what I mean? So it's important for people to know what's going on the inside by getting regular medical checks and going to see your doctor and getting everything checked out. Because if you're doing a clean fast right, you're eating pretty well, but you're not sort of seeing the results that you want to get, then sometimes there could be something else going on in the background. So it's important to get checked out, isn't it?
I couldn't agree with you more. As a matter of fact, let's see, I started in September of 2022, reached my goal December of 2022. It was March of 2023 that I had blood work drawn. And it had been a while since I had blood work, but my cholesterol was good, but I did have a hemoglobin A1C. And what I found out was that I was pre-diabetic. Now, mind you, I had been doing intermittent fasting for about 6 to 7 months prior to that blood work. So being pre-diabetic, even after, you know, making those changes, I can only imagine if I would have had baseline labs drawn before my journey, I probably was full-blown diabetic and just didn't know it, undiagnosed, silently killing me in the background. And so I was glad to have caught that. And a matter of fact, I'll be having my next A1C check here. I'm going to have it done in just 3 months and see where I'm at. And hopefully by then I'll have reversed my, you know, pre-diabetes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. It's important to check that lab work and, you know, get those physical assessments done, as they can be an indicator of your health status as well.
Yeah, I think that's important. Particularly, I know when I work with people now that are just starting out, I say, hey, maybe when's the last time you've had some blood work done, that sort of thing. Let's get some of those things done so we got some checks and balances to go forward and have a look at in the future in 6 months' time. And also the thing is, Joe, when you start out, I think it's important to take photographs, measurements, because there is a lot more going on than just the scale. And I know a lot of people, a guy sent a photo to me the other day. He's only recently just started. And just after 3 weeks, he's probably lost around, you know, 3 or 4 pounds or something like that. But the reduction of inflammation in his face in these photographs was quite incredible when you see them side by side. So I think it's important for people to take measurements, take photographs, all of that, and just keep an eye on your journey. Make some notes, like you're talking about, all those NSVs that you were seeing, the arthritic fingers, all of those sorts of things. Write them all down, because it's important as you go along to look back on that and to get motivated enough to keep going, because you can see what's going on the outside, but you can also see what's going on the inside from those things happening to your body.
Absolutely agree. We definitely documented, my story is well documented, and I couldn't agree with you more. Now, I will say that we didn't take the pictures. We have pictures, just, you know, candid ones, but not necessarily purposeful to see our weight loss. I'm a little camera shy when it comes to that, but I do encourage it. If someone is willing to sit in front of a camera and take those snapshots, by all means. We did do waist to hip measurements. That was also beneficial too, to see, you know, the effect of intermittent fasting on the waist to hip ratio, and how that can be an indicator of cardiovascular health, and to see improvements along the way with those different metrics. They're great encouragements along the way and reminders of why you do it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Joe, just remind me, what was your total weight loss since you started all up?
Yeah, so I lost right around 50 pounds in a 4-month time frame.
Yeah, yeah, man, that's going for it. And you know, people, 50 pounds, I'll tell you what, I picked up a leaf blower. It's a steel leaf blower that you blow leaves with, right? It's quite heavy. It's like weighed 12 kilos or 25 pounds, and I strapped it to my back. And I walked around the property here for 2 hours, and I was just like, man, I've lost like 4 or 5 of these. And it's this weight I could feel. So I always say to myself, and they say, oh, Graham, I've only lost 5 pounds or 10 pounds. Well, I say to them, well, you know what? Go down to the supermarket, pick up 5 pounds or 10 pounds of potatoes, then walk around the supermarket for 20 minutes with that 10 or 20 pounds in your hand, and see the difference it makes when you drop it again, when you take that weight off, and you really see it. I know I walk with a backpack sometimes. I'll put a weight in it, you know, 5 or 10 kilo weight, just to feel that difference on my back. And it reminds me of how much weight that I've actually lost. And yeah, but I can't tell you, Joe, it's been super inspiring to have you here on the podcast, mate. But obviously, you inspired a lot of people, and I'll get to how people can get in contact with you in a minute, Joe. But if you're sitting around in the cafe there where you live locally, and your wife, and you're talking to some friends and family, and they're saying, hey, Joe, man, this stuff's oozing out of you, you know, give us some tips on how we're going to get going. And, you know, we're quite simple people. We just want the nuts and bolts. How are they going to get going with it?
I would tell them, you know, first do a self-assessment. See how you're eating now, see how long you're fasting, see what your eating window is. And I explained to them what an eating window is. It's when you take your first bite to the time you take your last bite of the day, and baby step your way into decreasing that eating window. And I tell them too, you know, as you decrease that eating window, look to eat, make better choices. You know, I don't necessarily tell them that they need to go ketogenic. I just tell them, make better choices. You know, look, assess the junk food, be honest about it. Assess the junk food, the sugars, the carbohydrates that you're eating, and all of those really store as fat. And so you have to be honest in your assessment and look to decrease them. And, you know, I tell them about the benefits of it. I think that's a really big catalyst to get people to change their mindset, is to hear of autophagy, and as you said, just, you know, cleansing the internals during your fasting period, and the non-scale victories that they can achieve by going through it. So I would say, start by assessing and being honest with your assessment, and then baby stepping your way to a goal protocol where you're seeing victories, where you're achieving goals. And don't be afraid to set aggressive goals, right? So don't be afraid to push your body. Your body is resilient. We're created so wonderfully. So don't be afraid to push your body, because it can go through quite a lot more than we oftentimes think.
100%. I'd add to that, Joe, just keep it simple, you know, baby steps, like you said, you know, one bite at a time, if you like, excuse the pun. I think you've just got to chip away and, you know, and give it time. For me, I say to everybody that I encounter that comes to me for help, commitment, 6 to 12 months. Set some intention, set some goals. You know, write a letter to yourself, write a contract to yourself, sit down, write an email to yourself. This is what I want to achieve. What is my life going to be like in 3 to 5 years? If my health continues to deteriorate, where am I going to end up? What is my mobility going to be like? What is my life going to be like if I get the weight off my body? What am I going to be able to achieve? What are my goals and aspirations that I hope to achieve by doing this? And then when you have those two checklists and balances, your whys become the most important thing of all. But anyway, Joe, and just before we go, Joe, how can people actually get hold of you or find your YouTube stuff?
Oh, wonderful. So my YouTube channel is called Wellness Weigh-In, just like it sounds. Wellness, W-E-L-L-N-E-S-S, Weigh-In, with a hyphen between the word weigh and in. And that's my YouTube channel. It's fairly new. Like I said, I just started it to shout it from the rooftops and reach even more people than, you know, I can locally and in my circle of influence around here. And it's been going very well. My goal is to post on a weekly basis if I can, and just talk about my intermittent fasting journey, give tips and tricks along the way, and then just convey the information that is truly saving lives. I mean, it's just been amazing. So I'm encouraged by it. And if people can join me on there and subscribe, that'd be wonderful. We'd be glad to have you.
Yeah, no worries, Joe. And we'll put the links in the show notes there for anybody that's interested in going along and listening to Joe. And I personally will be going along to check it out, Joe, because I find you're a very passionate and guy that's going to be a great sort of advocate for this lifestyle. And I'd love to do some work with you in the future. But Joe Bonanno, thank you for joining me here. And just before I go and say thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway, I'd like to thank your wife, too, for introducing you to this wonderful lifestyle. She's obviously a great lady because you married her, but thank you for introducing Joe, because we need more people like Joe in the world talking about this lifestyle. Cheers, Joe, and you have a great day.
You too. Thank you, Graham.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe. Thoroughly enjoyed that chat with you here on the Fasting Highway. I really look forward to catching up with you in the future in 6 to 12 months' time to see where you are now. And I think you're very inspiring. And thank you for sharing your passion with intermittent fasting. I think you're going to help a lot of people. Okay, folks, as you heard now, the podcast is brought to you by our Patreon community. Without the support of our patrons, we simply couldn't be bringing you this each and every week. What's in it for you by joining the Patreon community? Well, you get a lot of back for your support. You get 2 Zoom accountability meetings each month. There's bonus content in there. There's extra podcasts. There's a lot of discussion topics. There's also things like audio series on breaking free from sugar, mindset shifts, and much, much more. And content is put into the Patreon community each and every week to help you with your intermittent fasting lifestyle. So you can find that link there in the show notes at www.patreon.com/thefastinghighway. Choose the level support, join, and we'll see you soon. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.